Today is Thursday. It's May 4th, 2017. It's 11:14 in the morning. This is John Williams, and you're listening to The Mincing Rascals, portions of which are broadcast on WGN Radio on my Saturday morning show at 11:10 a.m.
I'm Steve Bertrand, the host of The Business Lunch on 720 WGN, noon every weekday.
Your turn, Scott.
I'm Scott Standis, editorial cartoonist for the Chicago Tribune, and I'm also do the Prickly City podcast right here on WGN Plus.
Eric likes to go last so he can do this.
Oh, boy. Wow. I just want to say I'm Eric Zorn, the combustible columnist for the Chicago Tribune. I run Wednesdays, Fridays, and Sundays in your newspaper.
How much time do you spend on that each week?
How much time do I spend? Yeah. Hours. The hours. Like going through the thesaurus?
It's well worth it. Time well spent.
Can I start by saying hello to Jimmy Woods, who I learned last week stumbles through the suburbs of Dublin every week listening to our podcast?
We have listeners to this podcast I've heard from in Arizona and Florida and states throughout the Midwest. We always appreciate that. And if you ever, Eric Zorn always wants us to include the listeners to this podcast more in the podcast.
I would like that. Yeah.
So if you want to reach out to us, yeah, you can do that somehow.
Send a letter, stamp, self-addressed.
Actually, at the end of this podcast, producer Elif will tell you how you can make a comment or a question that we will address. Let's start with James Comey and Hillary Clinton. Was Hillary right to bring up the fact that, while she played a role in the loss of the presidential election, it really turned on the James Comey letter on October 27th of last year? A, should she have said that? And B, do you agree with that?
I think she was perfectly within her rights or character to say it at this time, absolutely. And I totally agree with it. I absolutely agree with it.
I think it was fine for her to bring that up in the context of why she lost. I don't think that that's why she lost. I mean, I could be wrong. I just don't think that it would have turned those 70,000 or whatever it is votes that needed to be turned in those key states her direction. She ran the risk of sounding a little bit sore loser. And I guess maybe if you listen to her entire answer to that question, where she talked about, you know, like she admitted that she had had some failings.
She asked for absolution and
all
that.
She's going to be writing a book. She's going to be explaining what she thinks went wrong. This was certainly part of it. But again, I don't know if it was the factor.
I think it was one of those interesting cases. I'll get to your response in just a second over there.
Okay.
But I think it was one of those interesting cases where the media picks the part where she says the one thing. And if you'd gone 15 seconds on either side of that bite,
right,
you would get a lot more context. For instance, she was quoting Nate Silver when she said, "I would be president." She's still owning that, but I just think there's a little nuance or a little context there.
Dude, my bosses give me 2 minutes to present the world to you in a newscast.
I don't think it's easy for you guys, but you're right, Eric. I think when you listen to more of it, she does her own mea culpa on this too. Yes?
Yes and no. She does the mea culpa, and then she goes on to cite Comey. She cites the Russian WikiLeaks, which of course doesn't even exist, and goes on to blame a myriad of other reasons besides herself. I mean, she was a flawed, deeply flawed candidate, and she lost.
What do you mean the Russian WikiLeaks?
That's what she said. That's a quote. Yeah. That's what she said. She blamed, among the things she blamed,
Comey
was Russian WikiLeaks.
She said that in an hour or so after the Access Hollywood video comes out, there's WikiLeaks to sort of counter it, to give the media something else to talk about as well.
Are you saying you don't think that WikiLeaks was coordinating with the Russians at all? Or that
there's no evidence that they did. And in fact, the guy who posted the story said they weren't.
Okay, say that again? You think the WikiLeaks release weren't working
with
the
Russians?
No, it
was from a disgruntled Bernie worker in the DNC who released it.
You don't think that impacted the election, that whole conversation?
No, I'm saying calling it Russian WikiLeaks is ridiculous. It doesn't exist.
Eric, you don't think she would have won had there not been the Comey thing? I'm surprised by that.
I don't think so, because I mean, the letter comes out on, the 27th of October, and then he skins it back the Friday before the election. He says, well, there's nothing there.
Well, by that time, the damage had been done.
Well, when she announced...
What kind of voters are these who say, like, whoa, I'm not going to vote for her, and then he comes out and says, there's nothing here.
Onto something
and
there.
Then they go, well, I'm exactly. still not going to vote for it because there was that.
I mean, think of what you're asking them to do. Go from Hillary to Donald Trump. That's a very long
drive. Or from Hillary to not voting.
Yeah, I think that's probably more what happened.
When she announced, if I can pat myself on the back, way back when, I said that the one thing that's going to hold her back, and it turns out there were many, but one of the things that was going to hold her back was the fatigue and people saying, oh, there's going to be all this scandal. It's going to be unending, blah, blah, blah. Well, the Comey letter a week before the election or whatever fed right into that. People who were apprehensive because of all of the other investigations of the Clintons through the years only had that reinforced by saying, wait a minute, it's not over with. And I think she was a flawed. I think they did a lot of things very badly. But I mean, I think of it as a jalopy crossing the finish line. She still was going to cross ahead.
Well, it was a jalopy of 3 million more votes than Donald Trump.
Right. Well, she pointed that out, too.
Well, and I
would put
that
on my T-shirt and wear it every day if I were her.
If it makes her sleep better.
One of the interesting things that Comey said was that the reason that those emails ended up on Anthony Weiner's laptop was because Huma Abedin, his now former wife, was putting them on there so that she could print them out. That she wasn't like saying, "Hey, Anthony, look at the before you sexed some teenagers. Why don't you look at these emails?" she was transferring over there because, like in our house, there's only one computer that works with a printer for some darn reason. But it was not this sinister plot to share.
Well, let me ask Scott this: do you think that Hillary has at least taken the high road since the election? She has not been tweeting much. She's not given a lot of speeches. She's not reminding everybody about the disparity between the electoral and the popular vote that you just scoffed at. I mean,
I didn't scoff.
I think that was kind of a scoff.
Okay.
Didn't you?
Okay, let's go with the scoff. Go on. I'm sorry. I interrupted.
Well, that's the end of my question. Do you think that at least she has taken the high road?
I think both she and former President Obama have. I think she's running again. I truly do. I think.
Oh, wait.
I know. I get scoffed at this all the time.
Yes,
but look at what she's doing. Look at what she has said and what she's leading up to. She also said after her talk at the Women for Women International Conference that she's now part of the resistance. She's going to resist and be part of that.
You know
that's what she said. Don't say, "Oh God."
No. I'm not saying it to you, Scott. I'm saying it to Hillary Clinton. And I've been listening to Elizabeth Warren. She's out pushing a book. She is so much better spoken than
she
already
said. She's not running in 2020.
I know she says she's not running in 2020, but that's what you say. You hope she does. You hope Elizabeth Warren
does
not. She's really, I think she's really good.
What about Al Franken?
I think she's goofy, and I think a battle between her and Donald Trump would be even worse than the one we had with Hillary Clinton. I'm fatigued thinking about it. No,
all he has against her is that she's Pocahontas.
I know. I don't know if we need to dwell on that, but this is an example of anybody else says that, there's price to pay. Donald Trump says that, and we say, oh, that's Donald Trump. He's the president of the United States
and he's using
used Pocahontas as a pejorative.
A second grade schoolyard taunt.
You know, really, you almost have to stop and think about that. It's remarkable.
But we don't stop and think about it because you're right, because we just got new weird.
What's the next tweet?
Well, there's this whole other layer of how you cover him and what you say about him because it's never been done before. You know, I mean, the things he does have never been done by a Republican president or a Democratic president. So it's on a different level, right?
You mean his behavior? Generally?
His behavior, his language.
Well, he's never elected a child before. So
well, I know, but there's one thing about being fair or fair and balanced or pick your term. But then there's this extra layer on this one that it's never been. I mean, look, was it the Air Force football team to the White House yesterday and turned it into a political speech? He did it the Easter egg roll, you know? He is operating sort of extra Washington.
Well, he's got campaign ads, which CNN will not run, by the way, because in the campaign ad, he's got a video now that they wanted CNN to run, and in it they show Wolf Blitzer, and it says fake news. And CNN said, we're not going to run that. And then the White House said, see, that's the problem. They're trying to control the narrative. I wish that narrative wasn't even in play right now. We're 110 days into this term, and he's already collecting money. I get emails and texts from him all the time asking for donations. And I'll get premiums like signed hats or be eligible for them if I do for the next election. It's too soon.
And going back to the Hillary thing,
it's
by the way,
the
fact that she appointed her own lackey to head the DNC. I mean, she's positioning herself to run again. Everyone says she's so old. She's the same age as Donald Trump, who clearly, as you just mentioned, is running for re-election. He already has a re-election campaign committee.
I can't tell you how small the enthusiasm is going to be in the Democratic Party to watch a third run for president from Hillary Clinton.
She's the William Jennings Bryant of her generation.
Well, I still think she'd be a good president.
You know, I think she would be a good president too. I think she's unelectable.
Right now, she's unelectable. I don't think she could win.
There's just not a hunger out there.
And I don't know who that other person is. I mean, really, let's stop talking about the next presidential election. Except, I don't know who that rock star is. I don't know who the Barack Obama or the Donald Trump
is. Can I ask you a quick question? Because you have some connection to Minnesota. What Al Franken? Is that viable? Is that you know the guy?
Yeah, sure. In fact, he had a remarkable day this week at one of these hearings, because nothing is more entertaining than Al Franken questioning somebody at a hearing.
It's often because he's trying not to sound funny because he's worried about sounding funny.
And he's slow, and he's deliberate, and he's dry, and he's mean. I'm doing my Stuart Smalley. And
doggone it, people like him.
I don't think he would be a good candidate.
No, he's not a good candidate.
He doesn't have a good
presence.
He's brilliant.
Yeah.
Was he not a good candidate in Minnesota? I know he won.
He won just by the narrowest of fractions. They had a recount. Yeah, right. Since then, no, his profile's gone up. He's a competent, he's a smart senator. And he goes to every district and town hall meeting. I mean, he's really retail politics. He's good at all of that. He's moved up there. And by the way, Minnesota's getting more and more purple all the time. So don't think it's an easy place for a liberal up there, because it's not an easy place for a liberal.
Read a lot about him when his name was being floated as a potential vice presidential candidate last summer. And I was really impressed. I hadn't really followed his career that much. And he had kept a low profile deliberately. He didn't want to be the showbiz guy, the comedian.
Right,
He wouldn't even give interviews to anyone outside Minnesota, I think, for
Well, you know who the rock star of Minnesota is? It's a woman named Amy Klobuchar. She's the other Democrat senator. Her father was a columnist up there. And that's the name. If you want to remember a name from the Midwest who could be a dark horse, if she ever got so ambitious, she plays both sides of the aisle well. She's not hysterical. She's not super funny. In fact, she's kind of boring, and she's really good.
She is self-deprecating too, though, right?
A little bit. Right. But she doesn't, she doesn't have those sound bites. And her Facebook posts are comically wholesome. You know, I mean, she's just so mainstream.
America may really be in the mood for that.
I think she would be the better of the candidates that we've discussed.
Campaign 2020.
Not 3 years. Three years and 9 months.
Theme song.
Talk to me about health care, guys. So it looks like we're going to get a new version of the ACA. The Affordable Care Act is now the American Care Act, or the Affordable
American Health American Act, AHA, isn't it?
I guess a better version of that is better, but some people may discover that this wasn't as good for them as they'd hoped.
From what I can read, from what we can glean, and it's one of those instances where you're going to have to pass it in order to read it. I don't know that this is an improvement.
It's being passed because of the political expedience. They don't want to go home for the summer not having done it. We're past the 100-day margin anyway. Still has to go to the Senate. I mean, it's a cumbersome process.
They want to vote on it today so they don't even go home for the weekend. Couple week break and take heat from the
And I'm a little discouraged
by
that.
The outrage in the districts is not that they haven't repealed and replaced Obamacare. Obamacare is more popular than it's ever been, and this repeal proposal has like 17% approval. The earlier one, this one, which is harsher, is probably going to have a worse CBO score. They're not going to even wait for the CBO score. They're not going to debate it. I don't think they're even going to read it. It came out, at 8 o'clock last night?
Yeah.
I do not understand the rush here. They've had 6 or 7 years to come up with a plan to agree on something. They couldn't do it. They've been floundering around, and then suddenly they've got to do this before their vacation, and they're going to get hammered by it. I actually think that they're stepping on a rake here, and the Democrats are secretly happy about this because they're going to be able to, as Nancy Pelosi said, they're going to tattoo this bill on the foreheads of every Republican congressman who's running in a close district in 2018. This is going to be a disaster for them.
You agree with that, Scott?
The way Obamacare was a disaster.
Well, I think you're. I don't know, I'm not sure if you're being purposely naive or not, Eric. But I mean, of course you know why they're pushing it.
Of course you know why they're pushing it quickly
because they don't want people to read it. It's the same reason that Obamacare wasn't read and wasn't combed
after
over.
15 months.
Yeah, well, Obamacare, they took some time with it. I mean,
a little bit, and you're right. Yeah. And they waited for the CBO, and they're not waiting for CBO because we all know in this room, Republican, Democrat, or independent, what the CBO report's going to say. It's going to say the exact same thing that the earlier version of Trump Care said. And so, of course,
what, do we dismiss that? I mean, aren't you
interested
in that? No, you
don't dismiss it. I'm saying we know why they're shoving it through, and you have to call BS when it's BS, and this is it.
If we can have Elif play the soundbite when they were rushing Obamacare.
If you rush this thing through before anybody even knows what it is, That's not good democracy. That's not doing our work for our constituents. What's wrong with going home for August, having town hall meetings, listening to our constituents, and then coming back in September and doing this right?
Okay, so there it is. And what about that, Eric?
Well, the hypocrisy here, the Republicans were talking, one of their big objections to Obamacare, they had three. One was that it was passed, it was rammed through. They always said it's rammed down American people's throats. It's changing 1/6 of the economy done purely on a partisan basis. This bill is only getting Republican votes. They said that you had to that they were criticizing Nancy Pelosi for saying you had to read the bill before you had to pass it before you knew it was in it. They didn't get this bill until 8 o'clock last night. Hardly any of them have read it, and further they don't have a CBO score. And they were saying all along that this is their brand. The Republican brand is that we're responsible with your money. We know what bills are going to cost before we pass them. All those things are out the window. I really don't know what. I mean, my naivete here is actually genuine. I don't see the political calculus here except this very short-term victory that Trump can claim and that Paul Ryan can claim. Like, they did something. But what they did, I think, first of all, I think it's a disastrous idea in general.
And it's not going to last, right? Well, it's going to go away in the Senate.
It's going to go to the Senate, and they're going to—
That's your prediction, Steve? The Senate won't pass this?
They won't pass this. They might pass something, but they're not going to pass anything close to this.
I don't see the advantage of it. I see this being something that's going to be really difficult for Republicans to run on.
All right, wait a minute. What's the matter, Scott?
Oh, I'm just looking. I'm thinking it's always short term. Always short term now in politics. There are no statesmen. They're gone, dead, buried. No one thinks past 2 years
from
now.
That's true.
2018 commercial. Promises made. Promises kept. Joe Blow, yeah. Republican.
They were holding up
Congress.
That sign.
Yeah, 2018 commercial.
Hopefully
Joe
the people
Blow, Republican. He had 136,000 people in his district lost health care because he voted for
Scott's ad will be a Democrat ad, and they'll have someone in an iron lung watching it.
That's pretty good.
Right? Well, so what do you have there? You've got some statistics.
So, you know, I'm not very good on the source of this, but Steve Rattner, who is a guy who I watch a lot on TV, he's from the he's worked for Democrats. He helped foster the auto bailout for President Obama. So he tweeted out this statistic looking at, you know, the big thing was this pre-existing condition. And a couple of Upton and others went in and said they got this $8 billion fund to help with pre-existing conditions. Well, Rattner put this out, and it looks as if it's from the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, whatever that is. Under this plan, if you have, let's pick one, diabetes, without a complication as a pre-existing condition, your insurance will go up $5,600 a year, okay? If you have, what's the next one, rheumatoid arthritis with autoimmune disorders, $26,000. Pregnancy, your insurance will go up $17,000. If you have
metastatic?
Metastatic, I would say that incorrectly. Cancer, your insurance, you can get it. With a pre-existing condition, will go up $142,000 a year.
If you get pregnant, your premiums go up $17,000?
$17,000, according to this.
Well, and are you saying that individuals, you don't know the answer to this, will have to pay that, or will that somehow be subsidized?
Well, that's after the subsidy. That's after the $8 billion in
really?
The pool. There's already a couple hundred in that pool, but they say they would need, I think, $600 to $700 billion in it to cover it. So, okay, you can get coverage, but who's going to be able to afford that?
And a lot of us, I mean, are looking at this thing thinking, you know, it doesn't address the 800-pound gorilla in the room, and that's healthcare costs. And you just touched on it,
right,
Steve? I mean, and that's exactly the problem. It doesn't open up competition, which presumably would lower costs.
What does it do?
It takes Obamacare name off of what this is.
But really, I mean, otherwise,
pretty much, you think?
Every stakeholder, the AMA, the AARP, all these groups that have a strong interest in healthcare, they're all against this bill. I've seen this incredible list of organizations that have said this is a bad idea. I think the Republicans are making a big mistake doing this, and I think, you know, I just think they're going to regret it. They're going to regret not thinking this through. They're going to regret not, you know, casting this vote that's going to be hung around their necks like a piece of raw meat.
Can I ask you guys a question, too, that's sort of related and sort of unrelated to this? There was a story in the Tribune today about a guy who was at the Trump Tower, had a $1,300 bill, didn't pay it because he said he doesn't like Donald Trump. He was drunk, too, and he's a jerk. Are you surprised that there have not been more acts of retaliation against Donald Trump or the administration at Mar-a-Lago or at his properties, Trump Tower? Every time I go up and down, I often walk or jog up and down the riverfront here, and it's such an easy target, if you will, for somebody to throw paint at it.
There's something I was just reading before I came in here, that there's someone's trying to get approval to float pigs
Yo, that was a while ago. Yeah, right.
No, they want to. He's actually launching the Kickstarter campaign. It's $250,000, and he wants to have big gold inflatable pigs that will float in front of the Trump
letters.
Name.
Yeah, and they're going to let him if he gets the money do that. It's a work of art, I know, but really, I mean, would you allow that, Eric? If
no,
you were in charge of that,
I would not allow that. On the, it's you know,
really.
No, I know you're an artist, Scott. I'm offending your artistic sensibilities, but no, you can't do that.
Yeah. Well,
but
you know, Stephen,
this guy? I think he's doing a movie or something about he's going around the country doing rude things, or maybe that's just what he's saying because he did this several times at other places that weren't.
He alluded to the movie Catch Me If You Can, which Leonardo DiCaprio plays a trickster, Frank Abagnale, who for years lived a jet setter's life by pretending to be an airline pilot. He's got some sort of thing going on here.
Well, running out on your check is not exactly a Frank Abagnale trick.
That's a Donald Trump thing, isn't it? Right?
Just declare bankruptcy and run.
I'm not satisfied with your work. I'm not going to pay you what I agree to pay you.
No, that's funny. That is
Colbert
funny.
This right? week did a thing where yeah. after on Face the Nation, John who's
Dickerson.
The host? So John Dickerson had Donald Trump on Face the Nation, and at one point the president just dismissed him because Dickerson wouldn't let this one question go about his tweet about Obama, saying
Obama
that he was sick and bad.
And bad.
I stand by
yeah.
nothing.
And so he would not be cornered on an answer on that. And finally, he just walked away and dismissed him and sat back down at his desk. Colbert comes on his show and he says that Dickerson has too much integrity to insult back at the president after he essentially insulted him by just dismissing him and walking away.
He also
away.
Called his program Deface the Nation.
Trump did that
to
his
Dickerson's
face.
So, yeah. So. I mean, that was one of the
and
things.
And he said he deserves better than that. So then Colbert says, I don't have so much respect or integrity. I'm going to. And then he unleashed a barrage of insults, some of which is pretty profane language that they bleeped. And now there's a movement to fire Colbert because. But it was, I guess, the point. I bring this up because of how do you treat the Trump sign? It's the president. I don't know how we manage the decorum here, but I think Colbert did cross a line.
And that's the example of what I was saying earlier about this sort of extra level. You know, it's not Republican or Democrat. Could you ever imagine a president of the United States in an interview with someone belittling the name of his show? I mean, it's just crazy.
Mocking him to his face.
Well, what and Colbert did last night, I think it was. I'm trying to remember which night it was. It must have been Wednesday night. Yeah. He said he regretted some of the words that he used, but he didn't regret the idea of insulting Trump like that. He said, "Well, I'm a comedian, and he's got the nuclear launch code, so you know, I think he'll be
fair
all right.
fight. Yeah.
He'll be okay." But yeah, he did. Yeah, I thought he crossed the line on those on that particularly one joke toward the end that was sort of homophobic.
Oh, yeah. I heard he got in trouble for that. The
oh, yeah.
joke,
that was the one they bleeped. Right. And I was pretty shocked because I thought, I'm not exactly sure what I just heard, but I know what it meant. And that was wildly inappropriate to say about the president and Vladimir Putin.
So that's where he's getting pressure, right? Being they're calling him homophobic because he made a gay joke, a gay
Colbert?
Sex joke. Yeah.
Oh, wow. I just
that's
thought
what
it was
I read,
in
yeah.
such poor taste. Okay. It doesn't need any more
analysis.
Then
he had Jim Parsons
that.
On last night to grant him absolution. So. He'll be all right.
Okay, let's wrap this bad boy up. Any last things you guys want to say before we do our recommendations? We didn't get to this. Just
well, so the Jimmy Kimmel thing. We didn't mention that. Did anyone think that
I cried.
Was important?
I tear up every time.
I thought it was one of the most remarkable television monologues I've heard in a long time.
Yeah, I did too, and I thought that it did have the potential. I thought to change some thinking on the healthcare debate.
HuffPost had that today.
Yeah, I've got a column up online right now about Joe Walsh's tweet,
which
basically tweeted like, "I don't have to pay for your kids' healthcare. I don't want to. No one should make me pay for anybody else's healthcare."
Former Illinois lawmaker. Shame on all of us. Seriously, he so loves being hateful, and he's good at it.
But you know, it's interesting. We're wrapping this up with talking about two late night talk show hosts. Because I think that it speaks to their relevance, you know, in many ways and how they are sort of grabbing an audience that the rest of us might not be able to do. Colbert. And I mean, Jimmy Kimmel.
Kimmel.
I mean, I think he moved the country in many ways on that. And I think he said it in such a succinct, heartfelt way. I mean, man.
I think a lot of people saw it as inappropriate. And I'm not,
really?
Yeah, I do. Because he's talking about his child who was born with a congenital heart. Defect, right?
Am I
getting that correct?
Yeah.
And that, and then all of a sudden dovetails into we have to have health care for all, and Trump is awful. And it seemed
he didn't say that.
No, he actually
Scott.
Didn't say that. He actually blamed the Democrats and Republicans, which I thought was kind of strange. But all he said was like, if your kid is sick, you should never have to worry about whether you can afford to save his life.
I think he was talking, it was pretty specific to pre-existing conditions again, right? Wasn't it?
He opened that part up, though, with, I want to say this, President Trump wanted to defund the National Institute of Health by a certain amount of money, and Congress didn't allow it, or they actually gave more money. But I think Scott's right. The takeaway from whatever his language was, that he's not with Trump on his attitude on health care.
I mean, and I think to say that, he's dovetailed from a very personal, touching tale to a political speech. And a lot of people were turned off on this. To think that it changed any minds is ridiculous, because that's exactly how it's being spun right now, is that the guys who disagree with what he was saying are going to continue to disagree with him. And the people who agree with him are going to be touched and moved and maybe strengthened in their support. Well, but I don't think it changed any minds.
Let the record show that Stanton just called me ridiculous. But I will counter that by saying Upton, this guy, is it Fred Upton, the Michigan congressman, very famously came out early in the week and said he would not vote for this bill because it didn't cover pre-existing conditions. He went to the White House and then got a promise, he and the guy from Missouri, that there would be more money for pre-existing conditions. I would argue that's evidence in my column that that Kimmel built some support for it.
The pre-existing condition thing is very important to a lot of people. And if Trump can't make the case that this new bill covers people as well as the old bill did, they're going to be in real trouble. So,
your recommendations for the week then, Scott? You got one that you are especially liking?
I do. There's an internet comic called The Oatmeal. And it's a terrific, he's a remarkable guy who does it. But he comes up with an explanation of why we take political attacks personally. And how they've done brain scans. It's much deeper than I'm describing it, but they've done brain scans to show how do you react when you say, he uses the example of George Washington's teeth. George Washington had wooden teeth, and you think, okay. George, but one set of his dentures were made out of the teeth of slaves, which is actually true, some of the teeth were from slaves. How do you react to that? If you're a great admirer of Washington, as I am, you get ticked. And that part of your brain is the same part of your brain that reacts when you're being physically attacked, which is fascinating. And if you read this piece, it gives context to why the political discussion today is so toxic.
Why we can't move one way or the other.
So theoatmeal.com.
Wow. How about you, Mr. Zorn? What are you liking?
I am liking the cover story in Bloomberg right now. It's called "Can Walmart's Expensive New E-Commerce Operation Compete with Amazon?" by Brad Stone. And it talks about how Walmart kind of screwed up the online thing. They said they underestimated the sublime convenience of online shopping. They now sell about 40 million units online. Amazon sells about 350 million. But they estimate that this online e-commerce stuff is going to double again from where it is in the next few years. Half of American households now have Amazon Prime. And I think this is great news that the competitors are rising up to try to meet Amazon's challenge, because the only real reservation I have about Amazon is it feels like this behemoth that's going to eat us all at some point. It's a very long story, but it talks about how Walmart is acquiring other e-commerce sites and trying to build some sort of a competition to Amazon. I think it's a very interesting story.
Man, Amazon Prime is fun. You know, hit the button and it comes the next day. All right, I'm going to indulge me a little bit here, because for mine, I always struggle with what I'm going to suggest. And I have this song, it's a Johnny Cash song, that pops up on my Pandora like once every 6 months. And when it does, it stays with me for days. So it's a song called "I Hung My Head." And I think Ben's going to play a second of it. But it's about that moment that I fear, where you do one thing that doesn't really speak to the rest of your life, but you do one stupid thing and it ruins your life, right? So this song, "I Hung My Head," is about a guy who's out on a hill, grabs his brother's gun, and he's out there aiming at things. He sees a guy on a horse, and before he thinks, he shoots him.
The sheriff, he asked me, why had I run? And then it came to me, just what I had done. And all for no reason, just one piece of lead. I hung my head. I hung my head.
That was recorded late in Johnny Cash's life, and the voice is there, and it just moves me every time I hear it.
It sounds like Dick Cheney singing that. Are you very sure?
I'm exposing myself here a little bit.
Yeah, that's so sweet of you.
Thank you, Johnny.
Johnny Cash, at the end of his career, that voice, it's amazing. It's remarkable on some of those songs.
Yeah, when he covered the Nine Inch Nails song, which I can't remember, it was a great video too, and my kids came running into my room and said, "Dad, have you ever heard of this guy Johnny Cash?" I go, Yeah,
I think it's the same album because he did U2 as well, covered a U2 really? Song. Yeah.
Well, I'll add one more then along these lines. This wasn't what I was going to do, but I have been listening to it ad nauseum the last 2 weeks. It's On the Street Where You Live from My Fair Lady. My Fair Lady's in town. I saw them on the marquee On the Street Where You Live, and I thought, oh, I love that song. Went online and found it, and Willie Nelson has a version that is very popular online. I think the older Willie gets, the more I like his singing. And I love, love, love that song and his version of it. So we'll end with a couple of songs
let's
today.
Drop that in right here.
I have often walked down the street before, but the pavement always stayed beneath my feet.
And that is this edition of The Mincing Rascal. Scott Stantis, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
As always, Eric Zorn and Steve Bertrand from the Chicago Tribune and WGN Radio. Our engineers, Ben Cortez, Elif Garris produces The Mincing Rascals. I'm John Williams. You can hear portions of this Saturday at 11:10. We'll drop another podcast on you next week.
Subscribe to The Mincing Rascals podcast on iTunes or the Google Play Music Store. You can also listen online on the WGN Plus app or WGNradio.com. Just click on the WGN Plus tab. The Mincing Rascals podcast is a presentation of the WGN Plus podcast network. You can also catch highlights every Saturday from 11 to 11:30 a.m. on The John Williams Show on WGN Radio.